What's it like drinking from a fire hose? You may already know. We're going to talk about that this week and talk about many, many other things this week on Principles and Policies. Hi, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And yes, you may have noticed that this is my first show recorded specifically for this week, which is, by the way, October 5th, 2024. It's the first time I've done a recording in about, oh gosh, I don't know, 5 weeks? There's a reason for that. Part of this is my drinking from a water hose. What a volume it was coming through that water hose. When I was a kid, I was old enough to have a driver's license, so I was 16 or 17. I was a member of a junior volunteer fire department, and we got to go out on we were asked to burn down an old church. This church was not recoverable. It was a completely dilapidated, rotting edifice, and it was dangerous. And we were asked as practice to come in and burn down that church. I still remember being part of a crew that used what they called a straight through fire hose. And what it was high pressure hose, no handle on it. You just turned the pressure on and whatever came out of the pumper went into the, and it was potent. If you got in front of it, you would not want to be in front of it. Well, three of us. We're given control of it under the supervision of the volunteers, and we actually knocked down a chimney with this thing. And the way we did it was we kept hitting it, and we got it to rock, and finally it came down into the pile. And it was quite an experience. But you get the idea. That's what they're talking about when they say, are you drinking from the fire hose? Well, listen, if you're watching the news and what's been happening, every time I got ready to do a show, I'd have my materials ready and all that, something would come up. If you listen to Mike O'Reilly's morning show, Talk of the Town on WLRY, you would have heard me interviewed on September 22nd. That was a Thursday. And I remember it quite well because I did it from a car. Now, why did I do my interview from a car? I've done it from a car before, but why in this case did I do my interview from a car? Well, I was sitting in the parking lot of a church getting ready to go in for a funeral. As many of you know, I'm an elder at Providence Presbyterian Church on Summit Road in Pataskala. By the way, please join us if you're interested in finding out. We're doing a church history on post-Reformation church history in the morning at 9:45, and then we have worship at 11. So, Providence Presbyterian Church, 7095 Summit Road in Pataskala. Please come and join us. We would love to have you. Please come and visit. If you're anywhere near the area, or even if you're not, we would love to have you in our church, and we would welcome you. Come visit with us. In any case, I was in a church parking lot for a funeral, and the funeral was for a beloved, a lovely member of our church, a lovely woman, her health just slid and slid and slid and slid. Her husband is a retired pastor in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. And they attended our church. I think she was a member. Now, you may, just a little segue. in the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, as in, I think, the PCA. Pretty sure this is the case. Pastors are not members of the church. They are members of the presbytery. There are many reasons for that. I'm not going to go into that. But their spouses very often are members of the church where they attend or preach or whatever. But pastors and associate pastors and those kind, they're members of the presbytery. Okay. I believe this lady was a member of our church. I'll be quite honest. She and I had a wonderful relationship. I often teased her, and she often teased me back. She had a great sense of humor. She was just a caring, loving, beautiful person. And she passed away from organ failure. She was in the hospital the last two or three weeks. It was odd. She had a collapse at home and laid on her floor for like 9 hours before anybody found her. We were talking about ways to make sure that didn't happen again. Well, God made the best way to make sure that didn't happen again. But normally I record on Thursday or Friday to do these shows. Well, that threw my schedule way off because I was out of the office for the whole day on Thursday. So I had to spend Friday where very often I do my last minute recording, and I am doing last minute recording today. This is October 4th for the show on October 5th, 2024. So there's my timestamp. You may have noticed the timestamps in some of the reruns I did. That being said, that's not the only thing that's going on with us. My wife and I own some property out in the country, and our water comes from a well. As many of you are going to be, many of you in rural areas have wells. Well, pay attention to them and have them tested from time to time, because we discovered after months of having all kinds of weird problems, recurrent STIs for the women, for me, bowel issues, horrible gas, horrible, all these other things. We have the water tested by the county, and that cost about $60, and it was well worth it. The county comes back and says, your well, you can't use that water for drinking. It's not potable water. It has too high a level of coliforms. Every well is allowed a certain level of coliform bacteria, the most probable number allowed in most places is like 4 or 4.1. And the person we bought the house from had it tested at some point, and it was like 2. So it was, acceptable. Well, our number came out at 27. More than 6 times the allowable level, and we had E. coli in it. Well, what does that mean? That means that somewhere down in the casing of the well, there's a crack, or the casing has collapsed. Well, we look into the well. We try to go back and find the permits for how deep the well is. Because we tried to treat it with the shock it with chlorine, which you can do. You can fix your well very often by shocking it with chlorine. But that didn't work for us. Our numbers were actually higher after we did that than it was before. So we suddenly find ourselves having to engage well drillers. And that kind of wiped out a week. We've had other things going on. Like I said, every time I tried to do a recording, something popped up. And that's the way life is. And life does come at you with like a water hose sometimes. First of all, I want to say something about the whole Hurricane Helene and Tropical Storm Helene thing. First of all, I have relatives in Western North Carolina, and they live on the banks of the French Broad River. Now, if you've been paying attention, the French Broad River is one of the places that overran its banks, and part of it helped wipe out I-40, and which will be wiped out now until they're saying until they will not be able to reopen I-40, at least in its original configuration, until September of 2025. I-26, which also got partially wiped out, will not be opening until the spring of 2020. Fall of 2025. I-26 will not be opening till March or April of 2025. So it's going to be months before those interstates, there are going to be a lot of people doing driving around on side roads if they're there. And that's part of the problem. The amount of rain, my sister-in-law who lives in Hot Springs, North Carolina, right on the French Broad, they are blessed by God. Now, they're not believers, but they have been blessed by God because their property is on a bluff over the river. So even though the river would have to come way over its banks, and it did come way over, but not way over enough. The river, they were telling me that in 1916, I believe, was the last huge flood. And again, more than 100 years ago, these things do happen cyclically. And more than 100 years ago, the French Broad River crested at its record, which I think was 16 feet over flood stage, what they call flood stage. This time, the French Broad River crested at 27 feet above flood stage. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you go along, I have seen pictures. Now, they're not far. You could walk to Hot Springs from their house. They own a farm, and they own a place. They rent cabins. Oh, by the way, beautiful places, Broadwing Farms. I'm sure they will not be open anytime soon. Their property is fine. They have solar panels that they bought years ago, so they have some solar electricity. They have water wells. Believe it or not, they're in Hot Springs, North Carolina, and when they drilled a well, what did they hit? They hit hot water. So there is that. But there they had food reserves, and folks, this is a warning that you should have canned goods and things put away and way extra for weeks worth. You should have weeks worth. Now, we don't get hurricane remnants here. When we do, we get it as in the form usually of high winds and some rain. Western North Carolina normally doesn't get that either, but that was a huge storm that came, cut a swath right through the Big Bend, what they call the Big Bend in Florida, right up through Georgia into South Carolina and North Carolina. And then it cut over Tennessee. Got it as well, because I know a dam broke in Newport, Tennessee. I'm familiar with Newport. Every time I've been down to Hot Springs, we've passed through Newport, coming and going, Newport, Tennessee. Well, a dam broke there. That's part of why the French Broad washed out I-40. We can get it here. We have other issues. We can have tornadoes that can wipe out electricity for days. We have windstorms. We had a derecho several years ago that just wiped out power all over the state. People were out for days. I can remember blizzards, the blizzard of 78, in January of 78, where I personally, my brother and I were trapped in our house. We lived in an old Victorian farmhouse, and my parents were out of town. They were in Florida. In Florida, enjoying the warmth and the sunshine. We were not enjoying the 25 below zero and the 60 mile an hour winds. We had fireplaces in the house that we could heat with because the central heating was out for about 5 days while we waited for them to get electricity out. So we burned coal. My mom always liked coal fire, so we burned coal in the house. Well, we got really low on coal. We were getting worried. And at one point, the local fire department came out to try to rescue us, and we're like, "We just go away." We cooked cans of chili. We had a Franklin stove, if you know what that is. It's a freestanding stove, and it's cast iron. And we got it cranked up. We had some wood, and we got it cranked up, and we cooked on it. I was, 1978, I was 21. My brother was 19. So we were able to fend for ourselves, and that's a good thing. And we did have canned goods. We had a freezer, and a lot of the food ended up being ruined in the freezer because we did heat the house, and it was... The utility room got warmer than we thought it did, and the freezer was off. That's why you need to keep canned goods and other kinds of foods. If you've got some way to, you need to hit some of these, what used to be called, these guys used to be called paranoid, the preppers. Well, they're not paranoid. Things can happen, and it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a complete breakdown in society, but... There are breakdowns in society. I can tell you that there anarchy reigns in Western North Carolina. I've heard reports from in-laws that said people are patrolling in downtown Hot Springs, North Carolina, carrying guns, and she found it disconcerting, and I go, you shouldn't. Those people are making sure that looters don't come in and steal anything that's left. Now, I can tell you, that downtown there were restaurants. She showed us pictures. She sent us pictures when she can get a cell signal, which is kind of rare, of tables floating in the local restaurant. It's a big place, tall ceilings. The water was about 7 or 8 feet inside those restaurants. So all that stuff is ruined. Parts of North Carolina, frankly, will be years to recover, and it may not. Some of the little towns, if you saw the pictures from Chimney Rock, North Carolina. Now, Hot Springs is on the northwest side of Asheville, just a few miles from the Tennessee border. Chimney Rock is southeast of Asheville. It's wiped off the map. The river, I think also the French Broad, simply came through and stripped all the buildings of all their contents and then all their structure. There are pictures showing contrasts of before and after. And those people are wiped out. They're wiped out. There are businesses that will never be rebuilt. There are people who have permanently lost their jobs. Permanently probably lost their homes, permanently in some cases lost their friends and relatives. Why? Because the death toll continues to climb. I think as of today, I think last time I heard, this could be wrong, was around 220. Now, it's by far not the biggest loss of life, at least not so far. But there are people whose lives are devastated. We need to be in not only in prayer for them, and we do need to pray for these people. Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Even people who didn't get hit by the hurricane lost homes. Sarasota, Florida did not get hit directly. Yet people lost homes. Ruined possessions, that kind of thing. the storm surge was really, really heavy on this storm. Why? Well, it's big. If you looked at a picture of it, it's gigantic. It's a gigantic storm, and as it came inland, it sort of concentrated, which is part of the problem. Okay, we need to be in prayer for those people, but we also need to do whatever we can to bring relief. There are reasons why we need to band together anytime there's one of these things. As Christians, we need to be involved in helping people get back on their feet. Right now, there are people that don't have any clothes. They don't have any food. They don't have any water. They don't have any cell phones. They certainly almost don't have radio if they don't have batteries to keep things running. You know, you can't even listen to the radio to hear when some relief might come. Now, we've had odd incidents. There's always odd incidents. There were people who voluntarily were coming in with their own equipment, helicopters and such, to rescue people who are trapped in apartments. Old people who are trapped in apartments can't get out and need to be taken somewhere where they can at least be taken to a hospital. There was a man and his son he had a small helicopter, and they were lifting people out of apartments who were old and sick and bringing them to a place where they could get some help. And a local fire official who took it upon himself to be the emergency coordinator told him if he did that again that he would arrest him. Well, my guess is that fire chief or assistant fire chief probably, when all the dust settles, will probably be suspended or lose his job, because he should. People who are doing things to try to help, to try to bring in water. I don't know if you paid any attention at all. Normally in a situation like this, the National Guard is called out and FEMA shows up to try to restore order and at least try to coordinate efforts to do rescue, food delivery, that kind of thing. Well, in this case, it's taken days to get anybody ready to get things. Now, is the National Guard showing up? Yeah, not just the North Carolina National Guard. It's also several states. I think 8 states have sent National Guard troops to help try to get in there and get people, because there are people way back in the mountains who are completely cut off. I know that my brother's father-in-law had a place not too far from the affected. In fact, I think he was in the affected area. This is years ago, so he's long since passed. But they were on Grandfather Mountain, and they were way, way, way out there. It's going to require some people will not be found, because there are a lot of missing people. Some people will not be found while they're still alive. That, unfortunately, those are the facts. But there has been an unconscionable delay on both the part of the governor of North Carolina and where's the president of the United States? Where's the vice president of the United States? Where is the candidate for vice president of the United States? They haven't come anywhere near that. Now, they've announced that they're going to go. That's like, you know, Kamala Harris announcing that she's going to the border after, you know, being the border czar for 4 years. Suddenly she's showing up at the border. Well, too little, too late. While we're grateful that, you know, something's going to happen with Kamala's going to go to North Carolina, I'm going to be willing to bet that the reception will not be particularly warm, because it took 4 days for anybody to even really come out and talk about it. And we find out from the head of Department of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, the reason that FEMA hasn't responded is because, quote unquote, they're out of cash. They're out of cash. The federal government is out of cash for emergency management. Why is the FEMA out of cash? The Federal Emergency Management Agency? They're out of cash because they spent all their money moving illegals around. Placing illegals in places where people don't want them. For instance, in Springfield, Ohio, a town of under 60,000 who suddenly found themselves dealing with up to 15 to 20,000 Haitian immigrants. Legal or illegal? The governor says they're legal. I doubt it. Supposedly refugees. Let me tell you, things are bad in Haiti, but we're not going to make them better by taking in everybody. We would make them better by them asking us to come in and help restore order and start to feed people and clothe people and house people there. But instead, we bring them here and turn them loose. This is part of the problem. This is part of that drinking from the fire hose that I talked about. This stuff is coming at us so fast and furious. I have a reason, I believe, why the federal government has not been Johnny on the spot. And this is going to sound paranoid, and I don't care, because I think it's true. The fact is that all these areas, aside from Asheville is an enclave of left-wing weird people. Sorry, having dealt with this, but Western North Carolina, Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee, South Carolina, North Carolina in general, even Georgia, except Atlanta, and Florida are all MAGA country. And this is beginning to take on the appearance of being a punishment. I'll be quite honest. If this has happened to the Northeast, New York, Massachusetts, Maine, Maryland, Pennsylvania, depends. If this had happened in Oregon, Washington, or California, if it had happened in Colorado, the FEMA would have been right there. Why is Mayorkas not going to Congress and saying, hey, look, we're out of money. You need to give us an emergency appropriation? Well, A, Mayorkas is incompetent. I mean, there's no other way to explain Mayorkas other than he is a bungler. And the same can be said for the vice president running for president. She is a bungler. She's a good time girl who basically made her way to the top by means other than competency and hard work. Sorry if this you don't agree, fine, whatever, but examine her record. The fact is that we have people dying due to not just incompetence, incompetence is involved, heavily involved, but also through malicious neglect. I will say that. Now, thank God that there are groups that are going in. Now, we all know, for instance, there are places who we would call on for this kind of aid. Let's think about Samaritan's Purse for a minute. Where's Samaritan's Purse headquartered? You know, that's part of the Graham organization. Where's it headquartered? It's headquartered in Asheville, North Carolina. What's going on in Asheville? You can't get in or out. All the roads are wiped out. All the bridges are wiped out. The town is partly destroyed. You know, a lot of these kinds of things are going on. Now, I know for sure that my church, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, is collecting for relief efforts and is attempting to work with local churches in North Carolina to get them food, water, clothing, those kinds of things, which is exactly what they need. Food, water, clothing. They need to be able to communicate. I'm willing to wager that a lot of people are going to be investing in generators, in Starlink. If you know what Starlink is a satellite internet, provider. It's Elon Musk. It's superb and outstanding. Now, what's interesting about this is that, he was awarded a contract to bring, satellite internet at a decent price to people who lived back in rural areas that couldn't get cell signals, couldn't do cell data, that kind of thing. Well, the beauty of Starlink is if you can get a satellite link, you can do Wi-Fi calling. You'd be able to call out on your Starlink. And in fact, I know people who did that in North Carolina. They went to a place, people made their Starlink available, and they were able to make Wi-Fi calls out, even when cell towers were down. And a lot of cell towers are still down and will remain down until people can get in there. You know, the damage is cleared to the point where people can get in, and, you know, roads are repaired to the point where trucks can get in and to repair, because it, you know, it's not load up your Volkswagen Beetle and head up to the cell tower. That's not the way that works. There's a lot of equipment involved. Okay, so there will be a lot of investments made in Starlink. There will be a lot of investments made in generators. Some people, of course, have them, and they're being very generous about sharing food. I know that places that had canned goods that weren't wiped out or anything, in some of these restaurants who, especially in like the Asheville area, whose freezers failed, but they were able to get the food out. What did they do? They cooked the food. You know, it wasn't ruined by water. They cooked it and they served it to people free of charge. Why? Because it's the spirit of camaraderie, the spirit of, hey, we're all in this together. And if we don't feed you, this will go bad. So please eat it. And please help, you know, clean up the streets. I know people who have been in scraping the sand that accumulated from the flooding back out of the streets and off the sidewalks to get it away. But A, part of the problem is that the debris that has come in off the rivers is toxic in many cases. Why? Because things upstream, it wiped out businesses, it wiped out hardware stores, it wiped out stuff that had chemicals in it, and it all washed downstream. And so a lot of the debris is toxic. It's not just a matter of going down with a shovel and a pail, and you got to be prepared to deal with the toxicity of the situation. This is bad. This is very, very bad. And it's in an area that's very, very rural. A lot of times hurricanes will hit in areas where there's a lot of urban, and very often they get cleaned up faster. Why? Because, well, there's good roads. If the roads aren't wiped out. Now, we had a friend down in Sanibel Island who was unable to get out to their home. And when they got there, their home was destroyed 2 years ago. I'm trying to remember the hurricane now. Inundated. And they had to build a temporary pontoon bridge so people could get back and forth. And a lot of people were ferrying. There were people with boats that were ferrying people. But it's recovering really fast. Now, Helene actually took out one of the temporary bridges out to Sanibel Island. So people were there. But once fixed, they can do it again. This is what people of Florida is actually sending pontoon bridges, temporary pontoons, to North Carolina for people where bridges are wiped out. We're trying to get traffic to be able to flow in and out of there. They will never fully recover until traffic can flow in and out. So, again, we need to very carefully choose who we give our resources to, who we hook up with to give disaster relief. And, again, be very, very careful. You and I both know, folks out there, there will be con men. You'd be lucky if you don't start getting calls of people trying to raise money. Oh, can you help us help the people in North Carolina? Well, you better check them out really, really well. And again, the Orthodox Presbyterian Church is collecting to try to work with a sister denomination, the PCA Presbyterian Church in America, to distribute funds and distribute aid in different places. Now, I know our own church, our pastor, his wife is from North Carolina, and he went to school in North Carolina and lived there for many years before going to Greenville Theological Seminary. So the family, essentially his wife's family, lost a big hunk of their farm. It just washed away with the flooding. The river took the farm. Now, are some of the buildings still standing? Yes, but the land is like devastated, wiped out. Once that happens, you know, there's not really much you can do. There's nothing you can do to recover that. So he is planning on making a trip down there and taking as much as he can with him. That's the kind of thing that is going to be going on in large numbers. I know that people are asking other people to sign up as volunteers. Strange things can happen in those things, but they're also, you know, you serve people. You serve those who are in dire need of relief. You serve those who are devastated and have nothing. It's a service thing. It's not exactly the gospel, but you may get a chance to share the gospel with someone who is grateful for you coming to help. You can show the love of Christ by volunteering and helping. The level of response from people who normally, you know, North Carolina, I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, and I am right, there is a North Carolina Emergency Management Group. It's, believe it or not, you would think that an agency like North Carolina Emergency Management would have a government website. You would think. But what do they have? They have a Facebook page. Now, a Facebook page. Okay. Well, at least they have something. But I'm sitting here. What are they worried about? I went to their Facebook page. And it's NC Emergency. On Facebook. Rumor control seems to be their top priority. Rumor control. And FEMA. This is what FEMA says. Somebody who knows grammar to go over their posts. There has been a lot of rumors spreading about the hashtag Helene response. Rumors can create confusion and prevent people from getting assistance they need. Help us share accurate information. What kind of accurate information? The fact that the federal government didn't respond for 4 days? Look, I'm not a big fan of FEMA. I'm not a big fan of federal response, but there are occasions when a coordinated effort is absolutely necessary. This is one of them. Now, let me just tell you that this kind of thing is not getting a, it's being pummeled, by, people, who have come there ostensibly for some kind of information. Here's what one person says. I love this. How was it a rumor when the president and the vice president say it? And that's exactly the point. In the earlier thing, FEMA said, call or contact us. And a commentator says, excuse me, FEMA, but just how do people call or contact you when they have no electricity, no cell, no home, no food, no medical supplies? You need to get your people off their cell phones and out to communities and physically help them. And this is part of the problem. You know, I brought it up, this fellow with the helicopter who went to help. And local, essentially local power brokers, tried to put up, restrictions, and in fact got a flight restriction around Lake Lure. This was around Lake Lure, which is one of the problem areas outside of Asheville to the southeast. And they got a flight restriction put in so that volunteers couldn't fly in and do the job that the local emergency management people can't get done. He threatened to arrest people. Okay, this is exactly what we're talking about. People are more interested in preserving their power than they are in actually getting the job done. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a huge problem. A huge problem. Especially with groups like FEMA. Now, a lot of people are bringing up the fact, oh, so FEMA's out of money. How about they take some of the money back from the $11 billion being given to Ukraine and use it for actual emergencies inside the borders of the United States of America? That's a great question. Why are we sending billions in aid to a situation that we really have no business being involved in? That's debatable. I understand that. If you want to debate it, send me an email. Send me a question. Send me your comments. Chairman@principledpolicy.com. I check that email. I don't get much email in there, but I check it two or three times a week. If you've got a question and you want to hear me answer it, or you, gosh, if it's a really good question, I'll bring you on. We can do a Zoom call and you can ask me and we can talk it out. In any case, that's chairman@principledpolicy.com. Okay. You can see that essentially people are quite, taken aback, and angry about the response that's come out of the federal government on this, and also their state government, because it doesn't seem to be particularly rapid response from the state government. We have North Carolina emergency management, all the usual stuff. Cell phone providers are working hard to restore cell service in Western North Carolina. Oh, of course they are, if they're allowed in, and that's part of the problem. Restricting people from coming in. I understand you don't want tons of people in there because you don't want looting. Okay? We get that. We get that you don't want a lot of traffic. First of all, it'd be tough to get traffic in and out of there. You want the roads open so the emergency response can come in and you can get people out and take them to places where they can get medical care, where they can get food, they can get water, they can get clothing. Useful information on this Facebook page. Again, Facebook, really. Joe Blow, who's up in the mountains, with no electricity and no internet access, this page does nothing for them. What do we see on there? The Small Business Administration launches disaster assistance for North Carolina residents and businesses impacted. folks, it's going to be a long time before. Let me tell you, I've seen the pictures from Hot Springs, North Carolina, from Asheville, from Chimney Rock, from even places like Newport, Tennessee, towns along the French Broad, towns along the Pigeon River. Small businesses are going to be years to recover. And right now, we need to get just basics there. So I'm not entirely impressed with some of this. But this rumor... now, here's something useful actually posted on here. Beware of fraud and scams like I just talked about. Now, what do they want you to do? Contact FEMA. Okay, folks. Contact FEMA. We can. And most of us have developed a pretty good ear about fraud, but I've been come close a couple of times recently, people identifying themselves as bank fraud departments calling me. And in the end, it turns out wrong. It is a fraudster. You should take note that if they have a Middle Eastern accent or an Indian or Pakistani accent, and they call themselves, Robert Nordstrom or something like that. Okay, it's fake. I finally caught one of those guys, and I go, "So your name is Robert Nordstrom?" "Yes, it is." "Yes, that is not your name." "Yes, it is." "No, it is not." "I want to know what your real name is." "Well, click." You know, they go away. But yeah, be very discerning. Suicide and crisis lifeline. Folks, if these people are contemplating suicide because they are so cut off, they're not going to be contacted to the suicide hotline, probably because they can't. This kind of stuff is kind of the usual stuff. "Look, we're doing something. We're doing something." I'm just dumbfounded by this. And I'm further dumbfounded by people saying that, well, it's not the federal government's fault that they're not responding. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There is a political prejudice involved. There is essentially the fact that we have a president of the United States who now, in a recent interview, asked about storm relief, and storm relief efforts said, "Which storm are you talking about?" How could he not know that we're talking about Helene? How could he not know? Ladies and gentlemen, we have a man at the top. Now, yes, he stepped down from being the candidate for president. Okay, fine. That's a good thing. The fact is that he is non compos mentis. He is incapable of doing the job. He doesn't know what's going on. While people were suffering in North Carolina, he went to his vacation home in Maryland. Did he man the White House and get on the phone and get people up and running and going to do the response? No, he went on vacation. This is why people are not paying... have no respect left for the sitting president of the United States, who really should resign. Look, I still think in my heart of hearts that Kamala Harris will end up being president before the normal end of term. I think Joe Biden is probably going to be squeezed out as early as before the election. We have about 6 weeks left. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't do the 25th Amendment thing. I did a show, I don't know, back a few weeks, where I talked about the 25th Amendment, how it worked, what they would have to do. The cabinet, the vice president and cabinet would basically have to send a letter saying he is incompetent to do the job. We need Congress to act. And they would essentially, he would not be removed as president, but he would no longer be acting president. The vice president would become the acting president. I would look that would happen. Why? And they may use this hurricane response as the method by which they get that done. That wouldn't shock me in the slightest. In any case, we have a president who should not be allowed to continue in the office because he cannot do the job. And he's really been unable to do the job since he took the job. It's just simply gotten worse and worse and worse and worse. This man is not completely cognizant of what is happening around him. So I think even his supporters are beginning to say, oh my gosh, we have to do something. And it wouldn't shock me if something didn't get done. There is actually a political advantage to that. The advantage would be that people would say, let's rally around the acting president. And we need to some people would actually vote for her for president because she was the acting president and they wanted to show support for her taking over that job. Okay, fine with that. Now, that's part of the water hose. And again, please get involved. Please be in prayer, but don't just be in prayer. Get involved. Find out who is doing collecting food, you know, canned food, water, clothing, hospital, you know, medical supplies, diabetic supplies, especially that kind of thing. People who need to monitor their glucose levels, just all kinds of things. Get involved, please. Now, another part of the fire hose that we're dealing with, and we're going to run out of time before I get too much into this. As you're well aware, unless you've been living in a cave or been comatose, we had a vice presidential debate. And of course, it was more of what we've come to expect from the mainstream media, who is virtually to a man or woman in this case, out to destroy the attempt by Donald Trump to be reelected. They desperately wanted to embarrass J.D. Vance. They desperately wanted to pump up Tim Walz. And I watched about as much of it as I could take. I watched J.D. Vance essentially set to move in and make a crushing blow as a reply on a question, and the moderators, quote-unquote moderators, these people were not moderators, they were partisans, moved in and said, no, we need to go on to another subject. We have several other subjects that we have to cover. Uh-huh. So it became clear to me that what was happening was what normally happens. There were two moderators, quote-unquote moderators, and one candidate on one side, Tim Walz, and the two moderators, and J.D. Vance on the other. CBS News came out and said there won't be any fact-checking. What did they do? They immediately went to fact-checking and got the facts wrong. They tried to play the game with crime increases. They're playing a false statistic that the illegal immigrants in this country are not committing as many crimes as everybody else, which is completely false. And everybody knows it's false. In fact, that particular fact check, quote unquote, has been tried on over and over and over again. It's false. The fact checks were simply false fact checks. Ladies and gentlemen, this was a partisan campaign effort. Now, what is the aftermath? The aftermath is the fact that Donald Trump has basically come out and said, hey, no more debates. We're done with debates. And understandably so, because all debates turn out to be 3-on-1. 3-on-1, 3-on-1. You know, I've noticed that years ago, on the Sunday morning shows, the political talk shows on Sunday morning, what would happen every time? 4 liberals, 1 conservative. The conservative is usually the guest, and 4 ultra-liberals, who essentially come out and attack, and as in the case with J.D. Vance, they simply cut your mic, and also with Trump in his debate, cut the mic. Don't let the now Trump was his own worst enemy in his debate with Harris. I'll be right up front. You know, I never did a show covering that because I wanted it to develop. I wanted to see what was going to come out of that, what the long-term response was going to be, to see what people thought and to comment on that. And the fact is that life got in the way, and I didn't get a chance to do that. But the fact is that Donald Trump made a huge mistake by letting Kamala Harris, believe me, they worked hard on this. He allowed her to get under his skin regarding his rallies. You know, your rallies are boring. People leave. Well, it's true. Look, I mean, you can go to a rally and watch Donald Trump rant for an hour and a half. Now, there's more that goes on. There's music and all kinds of things, and people will go. He's coming back to Butler, PA to do another rally to make up for the one that people missed. And one poor man and two other people, one poor man killed and two other people shot under very rapidly becoming dubious circumstances. Ladies and gentlemen, I did shows. The reruns I ran, I chose very carefully. I ran 3 shows on the Ten Commandments as the basis of law. There is no doubt that the Ten Commandments are the basis of law. I ran 3 shows on that, and then I ran 2 shows on gaslighting. Why? Because we are being gaslit virtually every day. We're being gaslit on, gaslighted on our emergency response to Helene. We're being gaslighted on the fact that Donald Trump was shot at on July 13th and hit in the ear. What are we hearing about that? The news media has completely dropped it. I can guarantee you that if a right-wing fanatic had shot at Kamala Harris and hit her in the ear at a rally, that would be on the news every day. The films would be shown every night. What are they showing? And you know, why are they not showing Donald Trump being shot and getting up and raising his fist and saying, fight, fight, fight? There's a great reason for that. It's terrible for what they want to get done. They want to defeat him. This is not anybody that tells you that the news media is neutral and they only report the facts. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not true and has never been true. I hear about people pining for the return. If only Walter Cronkite were back. Walter Cronkite was one of the worst partisans out there. He really, really was. And, you know, since I've recorded, you know, Phil Donahue has passed away. And condolences to his family. But the fact is that my parents had personal dealings with Phil Donahue regarding his TV show. He was a propagandist and a charlatan. Sorry to tell you that. He was not a great interviewer. And I watched while he tried to undermine people. Having to do with Reagan being president, he kept insisting him Reagan's policies aren't working. This was in September of 1981. You know, he'd only been president for a few months, and his first budget didn't take effect until October of 81. And Donahue kept insisting, but the policies aren't working. They're not implemented yet. He insisted that he knew what was going on. Okay, I'm going to run out of time here, and I'm pretty close to there. You know what I think. And I didn't get anywhere near where I wanted to get to, and but this never a shock. You know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. And yes, I know the website's busted right now. I'm working on it. But contact me by email. chairman@principledpolicy.com. chairman@principledpolicy.com. You know what I think. I want to know what you think. And I would ask that you join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.